Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Today we're looking at a stack of sources trying to figure out what's really important about a specific place and time. That's the Afrin region, known back in the Roman era as the district of Serestica. And we're looking at roughly 64 BC to about 330 AD.
Yes, and it's really important to state right up front, based only on the materials we have in front of us today, that our focus is strictly limited to this period. So we won't be going beyond 330 AD at all. Which means, just to be absolutely clear, we're not discussing anything related to the post-2010 conflict in Afrin. Our task here is to understand this specific Roman chapter purely through the lens of these documents.
Exactly. So the goal is to use only these sources we've got to, you know, map out the geography, see how Rome actually administered this corner of the world, understand the military side, figure out the economy, and get a feel for the society and culture.
What insights can we really pull out about this region under Roman rule?
Okay, so let's unpack this. Setting the scene. Geography first. Where exactly are we talking about?
Right, so the sources place us in Serestica, described as a pretty significant district in northern Syria, and it encompasses what we know today as the Afrin Valley. Geographically, Serestica was in a really strategic spot. You've got the Plain of Antioch to the west, the big Euphrates River to the east. North was Commagene, and south, well, the desert stretched out, so it acted as this vital buffer zone, a key frontier for the Romans, where different worlds met, really. And the ancient name we have from the sources for the Afrin Valley itself was Euphrenus.
And Serestica wasn't just one isolated spot, was it? The sources mention other cities besides Cyrus, like Batnae, Baroe, that's Aleppo, now Bertha, Jura Europis, Hierapolis, Bambyse, and Zeugma. Zeugma sounds critical.
Oh, absolutely critical. Zeugma was probably the most important crossing point on the upper Euphrates River. Think of it like a major highway intersection, maybe. People, goods, and crucially, Roman legions moving between Syria and Mesopotamia, they often had to go through Zeugma. Before the Romans, well, the area was part of the Seleucid Empire, then a brief spell under Armenian rule, and then came Rome. Pompey annexed Syria in 64 BC, bringing Serestica firmly into the Roman sphere.
So how did Rome handle this new territory at first? What was the initial setup like?
Well, initially it got folded into the huge Provincia Syria. This was an imperial province governed directly by an appointee of the emperor, a high-ranking official, a legatus Augusti praetor, basically the top governor holding big military and civil power. And the capital for this whole massive province was Antioch. But Rome was often pragmatic, you know, especially in the east. They didn't just erase everything. They tended to allow a degree of local autonomy, particularly in established Hellenized cities like Baroe, left the Greek-speaking elites largely in place.
Right, but that administrative structure, it wouldn't have just stayed the same for over 300 years, surely. How did things change?
No, definitely not static. It evolved. Rome's needs changed, challenges changed. The first big shift, that came in 98 AD under Emperor Septimius Severus. Basically, Syria was just too big, too powerful for one governor, especially after one governor backed a rival emperor, big risk. So Severus split it. You got Syria Col, Hollow Syria in the north, which included Serestica and Syria Fenice to the south. Antioch stayed the capital for the northern part, Syria Col.
Okay, and then another change closer to our cutoff date.
That's right. Around 341 AD, so just a bit after our 330 AD limit, a whole new province was created, Augusta Euphratensis. It was carved out of Syria Colle. And what's key for our region, Serestica, is that this new province explicitly included both Commagene to the north and Serestica itself. The potential capitals mentioned were either Cyrus or maybe Hierapolis Bambyse. And this wasn't just, you know, moving lines on a map. This whole trajectory for Serestica from being just a district in a huge province to being a core part of a new frontier-focused one, it tells us something important. It shows Rome increasingly recognized its strategic value. It was directly linked to defending the eastern frontier, especially with the rise of the Sasanian Empire in Persia in the 3rd century. It became the key defense line, not just part of Syria.
Okay, let's zoom in then. Cyrus itself, the capital of Serestica Nebihiri today. The sources really stress it as a pivotal center. What made it so vital, militarily speaking?
Well, Cyrus was a cornerstone of Roman military power there. We know pretty early on, 1st century AD, parts of Legio Expertensis were based there. Around 6 AD, then again 18 AD, their main job, guarding that absolutely critical corridor, the road linking the Euphrates, crossing at Zeugma down to Antioch, and then towards the Mediterranean, Egypt. Losing that route, disaster.
That legion, Legio Expertensis, they moved on eventually, right?
Correct. By 66 AD, they were transferred to Judea. But, And this is important. That didn't mean Cyrus became less important militarily. It stayed a key base. It would have been garrisoned by auxiliary units. These are non-citizen troops, often specialists, recruited locally or from other provinces. Standard practice for established frontiers like this. And with those intense Sasanian attacks in the 3rd century, well, you absolutely needed a strong, permanent military presence there.
And the sources mentioned Rome really invested in fortifying it, particularly later on.
Yes, exactly. Its strategic value is clear from the big investment in defenses. After getting hit by Sasanian raids in the 3rd century, Rome reacted. They rapidly developed and fortified Cyrus, and archaeology actually confirms this. We see city fortifications built or seriously beefed up around then. Its location was just perfect. Good for launching campaigns north into Armenia, and essential for holding the line against threats from the east, from the Parthians and later the Sasanians.
But hold on, you mentioned urban life earlier. It wasn't just a military fort then. What was the city itself like?
Ooh, far from just a fort. Cyrus was a proper urban center. It actually had Hellenistic origins, founded way back by Seleucus Nicator around 300 BC. And excavations show its city plan, that basic layout, persisted right into the Roman period. It had a standard Hippodamian grid plan, you know, streets at right angles, and a main colonnaded street, the Cardo Maximus, running through it.
And the Roman structures still there sound pretty impressive.
They really are. There are two Roman bridges nearby, remarkably well-preserved, still used today apparently, probably 2nd or 3rd century AD. One of them is particularly imposing, quite grand. Makes you wonder if it had a monumental, maybe even a symbolic purpose, beyond just getting across the river.
In the theater, the sources call it massive.
Massive is right. It's a huge Roman theater, something like 115 meters across. I mean, think about that size for a city on the frontier. It was one of the largest in all of Roman Syria, second only to the one at Basra. That scale alone suggests, well, either a very large civilian population or a massive garrison needing entertainment and public space. Or both. And it was apparently richly decorated, too, even using stone brought in from elsewhere. Then there's this unique hexagonal tower tomb, also likely 2nd or 3rd century AD, believed to be for a Roman military commander. The hexagonal shape is pretty unusual for the area, and aqueducts now, sources written after our period mention needing to restore an aqueduct in the 5th century. But a city and garrison this size, it had to have reliable water systems throughout the Roman period we're looking at, whether those were conduits, the underground channels, or earlier aqueducts that just needed fixing later. Plus, foundations of a large basilica church and, as we said, the city fortifications have been found.
So, trying to piece this together, was it mainly a military city or more of a civilian place?
That's a really good question. And the sources, they kind of hint at different things. Some descriptions do lean towards it being mainly military. But honestly, the archaeological evidence, that enormous theater, the colonnaded streets implying public life, the fact it could mint its own coins that points to economic autonomy and finding fine mosaics and wall paintings in private houses, all that points to significant urban life beyond just the soldiers. You know, frontier centers like Cyrus often became these dynamic hybrid cities. The military presence itself often acted as a catalyst. It attracted veterans who'd settle down, merchants following the money and the trade routes, locals providing goods and services. It was likely a really vibrant mix.
Hannah the Jai Lady's here. Roge Bosch Hannah. Yes. Time for some chai.
Let's... Wait. Takes a sip.
Okay, this is good today. Not too bitter, maybe just a tiny bit more sugar would make it perfect, but definitely hitting the spot.
Calmly taking a sip. Yes. Quite warming. A necessary pause.
All right, recharged. Back to Serestica. Okay, so beyond the military side and the city of Cyrus itself, how did people actually make a living here? What was the economic engine in this region under Roman rule?
Well, the absolute base was agriculture. The sources are pretty clear describing Serestica and nearby Commagene as a rich agricultural area and very fertile. Mm. This wasn't just subsistence farming. The land was productive enough to support a fairly dense population and those urban centers like Cyrus.
And there's one crop the sources really emphasize to this area, isn't there?
Exactly, olives. Olive cultivation. The Afrin region apparently has a history of olive growing going back maybe 4,000 years. Mm. Now, the specific sources we have don't detail Roman-era olive presses right here in this part of the valley in our time frame, but given how important olive oil was in the Roman economy overall, Roman policies often encouraged farming expansion, and you have this deep local tradition. It strongly suggests olive oil was a major product for local needs, definitely, including the garrison, but almost certainly for trade, too.
Any other crops you get to mention?
Well, there's a suggestion that the old Seleucid name, Onoparis, might hint at viticulture, so wine production. And of course, you can be absolutely certain cereals like wheat and barley were staple crops. Essential.
Okay, what about industries not directly tied to the farm?
Oh, there were definitely local industries. We know Cirrus, like Baroa, could mint its own coins. That's a big sign of economic activity and some autonomy. Building those cities and forts required local production of materials, bricks, tiles, that kind of thing. Pottery, including essential items like oil lamps for lighting, would have made locally. And maybe glass. Yeah. Glass blowing was invented not too far away, around 50 BC, so it's highly likely glass vessel production was happening in Roman Syria by our period, making glassware more common.
And how did all this stuff connect to the wider Roman world?
Yeah.
How plugged in was Cerestica?
It was absolutely plugged in, integrated into the major regional trade networks. That Antioch-Zugma road we mentioned, it wasn't just for soldiers, it was a vital commercial artery. It linked the Mediterranean world through Antioch with Syria, Mesopotamia, and potentially routes leading even further east. So goods were constantly moving through, or maybe starting from, this region.
What kinds of things are we talking about being traded?
Well, agricultural surpluses, olive oil, probably wine, grain, these were likely major exports, feeding the wider empire. Imports would include things needed for the military and for the civilian elites. Metals, perhaps fine marble like the stuff used in the theater, various luxury goods not made locally. And of course, Rome controlled this trade through taxes and regulations.
Right, a region, this busy military bases, cities, trade routes, it must have been home to a real mix of people who actually lived here during Roman times.
Oh, definitely diverse. It reflected the region's long history and its position in the empire. You had the indigenous Syrian or Aramean peoples. They were the bedrock, especially in the countryside, speaking Aramaic or Syriac dialects. Then you had the Hellenized urban folks, the Greek-speaking elites, their culture established way back in the Seleucid times, living in cities like Cirrus and Baroa. The Roman military added another big layer. Roman citizens serving in the legions, recruits from all over the empire and the auxiliary units, and veterans, who often settled nearby after their service. And the trade hubs would have attracted merchants and traders from various backgrounds, too. The sources describe Cerestica as quite heavily populated, so this mix was living together in fairly large numbers.
So how did Roman culture mesh with all these existing traditions? Was it just, you know, Rome comes in, everything becomes Roman?
No, definitely not a simple takeover. It was much more a process of acculturation, synthesis, really. Romanization brought things like Latin for official business, Roman law, institutions like public baths, which are implied by those later mentions of needing repairs and the imperial cult, worshiping the emperor. But especially in the East, with those strong Hellenistic roots, Greek culture and the Greek language remained incredibly strong, particularly among city elites. And local languages like Aramaic and Syriac definitely persisted, especially out in the countryside. You can sometimes see this synthesis in things like art or architecture. The sources mention, for example, maybe fewer human and animal figures in reliefs at Cirrus compared to typical Roman art. That could suggest local tastes or influences from Eastern traditions. So it wasn't one replacing the other, it was layers of culture coexisting, influencing each other, creating something uniquely local rather than just a carbon copy of Rome.
What about religion then? Was it all Jupiter and Minerva?
Not at all. It was a real mix of traditional pagan cults. In Cirrus itself, we have evidence for worship of major Greco-Roman gods like Zeus and Athena. There is mention of a temple to Zeus on a nearby mountain, apparently. But this worship often involves syncretism, where Roman gods were blended or identified with powerful local deities, gods like Baal Shemen or Hadad, who had been worshipped in Syria for ages. And right across Roman Syria, you had a whole variety of local cults and also those popular mystery religions.
And Christianity, where does that fit into this time frame, 64 BC to 33 AD?
Right. Christianity started putting down roots in Syria very early. First century AD, you know, figures like St. Paul were active there. By the end of our period, the early 4th century, Cirrus had actually become an important Christian center. How do we know? Because a bishop from Cirrus attended that massive, really important church meeting, the Council of Nicaea, in 325 AD. Now, what that tells us is that in the centuries before 325 AD, the first, second, third centuries, Christianity must have been growing significantly. Communities were forming, getting organized, enough to have a bishop representing them at such a major event. It was coexisting, probably competing sometimes, with the established pagan cults during our Roman period. This is all happening before Christianity gets official state backing later in the fourth century. The groundwork was definitely being laid.
We've talked history, administration, economy, culture. What about the physical stuff left behind? What does the archaeology specifically tell us about Roman Afrin?
Cirrus, Nebihuri, is really the star site archaeologically. And the digs there back up a lot of what the written sources suggest. You can see the Hellenistic grid plan still underlying the Roman city, that main colonnaded street, those amazing Roman bridges we talked about, the huge theater, that unusual hexagonal tomb, and the city walls, especially the later, stronger ones.
And the sources mention some interesting finds inside the city walls, too, didn't they?
Yes, exactly. Diggs uncovered a Roman house dated to the late 2nd or early 3rd century AD, and inside, intricate mosaics and wall paintings. That's really tangible proof of domestic luxury, showing elites and serfs adopting Roman artistic styles and ways of living. Those mosaics, for preservation, were moved to the museum in Aleppo. The sources also mention inscriptions, like on tombs outside the city. Those are usually gold mines for names, social details, but the material we have doesn't go into great detail about specific inscriptions found at Cyrus itself. But they were there.
What about other places in the wider valley, or in Sresca generally? Any archaeological clues there?
Well, other sites offer bits and pieces. Iandara gets mentioned. It's mainly famous for its much older temple, pre-Roman, but the site was occupied later too. The Afrin Stele is another pre-Roman find showing ancient activity. Other cities in Serestica, like Beroea, Hierapolis, Zeugma, they absolutely have their own Roman archaeology, but they fall a bit outside the direct focus of the material we're looking at today. Oh, and it's probably worth mentioning the Dead Cities region nearby in northern Syria. While a lot of those villages really boomed a bit after our 330 AD cutoff, their early phases are late Roman. And their wealth, often linked to olive oil, hints at the wider agricultural richness of this whole area, the kind of wealth that supported places like Cyrus. So overall, the archaeology paints this picture. Cyrus built on Hellenistic foundations, but with substantial Roman development military public buildings, clear evidence of Romanized life with things like mosaics. And the whole region was deeply integrated into the Roman system, playing that crucial frontier role. So wrapping up over these nearly four centuries of Roman rule, Afrin or Serestica wasn't just passively sitting there. It was actively shaped, transformed into a really vital frontier region for the Roman Empire. This period profoundly influenced its cities, led to major infrastructure like roads and bridges, boosted trade, and created that complex mix of cultures and religions we've talked about.
Yeah, and it really sets the stage for what comes next, doesn't it? You see the hints of the Byzantine era emerging, the rise of Christianity with that bishop at Nicaea in 325, and the creation of that new province, Ufertensis, confirming its ongoing strategic importance.
Exactly. And the physical remains, the archaeology, especially at Cyrus, they stand as these really powerful, tangible reminders of the significant era. They offer invaluable clues about how Rome operated and how life was lived in this part of northern Syria back then.
And why does this ancient history matter for us listening today? Well, I think it's a really clear example of how strategic geography, combined with the power of a huge empire like Rome, could totally reshape a region. It layered cultures, shifted economies in ways it echoed for centuries. It really highlights the deep, deep historical roots of places that are still strategically significant now. Here's something to think about. How did those ancient strategic priorities, those trade routes, first really solidified by empires like Rome, continue to influence why northern Syria remained such a contested and important crossroads for centuries afterwards? You can almost see the patterns from the past echoing in later times.